Roundtable Podcasts, underwritten by Proctors, the Capital Region's premier performing arts center featuring the best in entertainment from Broadway and around the globe. Proctors.org.
Yo-Yo Ma is a 17-time Grammy winner who will be making a pair of appearances at Tanglewood this month. The first is this Sunday afternoon, August 4th, performing the Dvorak Cello Concerto with Charles Dutoit conducting. He will return a few days later to perform the Goat Rodeo Sessions, where Bach, bluegrass, and jazz are just some of the inspirations for the collaborative project. On August 15th, Yo-Yo Ma, bassist Edgar Meyer, mandolinist Chris Teeley, and fiddler Stuart Duncan will be playing Tanglewood, showcasing four of the greatest instrumentalists of today. And as we broadcast from Tanglewood this morning, it is a pleasure to welcome our friend Yo-Yo Ma to the round table. So, Yo-Yo Ma, do you love Tanglewood?
I adore Tanglewood. I think it's one of my favorite places in the world. And I also adore where Tanglewood is situated, which is in the middle of the Berkshires, which encompasses a tri-state area, and it's just one of the most beautiful. I think it's a place for contemplation, for creativity, for vacationing, for and it has, I think, some of the most wonderful inhabitants who are incredibly skilled and thoughtful, and I cannot say enough wonderful things about this area.
So, look, we both live in the Berkshires, but I want to ask you a question. When you walk into a store like the West Stockbridge store, you know, I once asked Sam Waterston this question, too, and I see our pal the Gov in there. How do people treat you? Do they give you your space, or do they run up to you and say, I've got to talk to you about the way you played that at Tanglewood last week?
They usually go and ask me where the deodorant is. And then ask for a copy of the Berkshire Eagle. Where can they get? How come their subscriptions in New York Times was canceled?
Amazing. I have a question for you that I think we all want to know. How do you remember all those notes, number one? And when is it that you discovered you could do all those notes?
Well, first of all, what makes you think I can remember anything?
Oh, because I've watched you, and it's astounding. I mean, I can't remember my kids' names. How do you do that?
Well, let's put it to please don't tell me that you don't remember your kids' names.
No, I remember them. That was a little that was a little over the top.
Yeah, exactly. But I can tell you that what I usually say to people who ask sort of, you know, how do you memorize things, I always say, just make sure that you try and memorize things before you're 21 years old.
Uh-huh.
Because anything you learn before 21, you probably will remember for the rest of your life. But anything after that, it's a pretty dicey question. So I think for things that I've learned, you know, in the last number of years, I use music because it means I can play a lot more music and because I can read music, and it also I don't worry about sort of saying, well, what's the next note? And it's sort of like a millipede or centipede, you know, saying, well, after you move your 57th leg, you know, what happens next?
57th leg.
So
right.
I do like to use music for things that I learned. I'm learning more recently.
When Mr. Steiker, my music teacher back in junior high school, didn't like something he heard, he would kick me in the shins. I was wondering whether anybody ever kicked you in the shins.
Oh, my goodness. It's funny because that goes lower than what I've usually heard stories of piano teachers would slap someone's hand, you know. So they're like, that's wrong. Bang. And I think that's old school.
Yeah.
I don't think people can get away with doing that these days, number one. And secondly, I wonder whether that was an effective method to begin with. I mean, did getting kicked in the shins improve your piano playing?
No, it was actually my trumpet playing, and the answer is no. Okay. But nothing would have.
Oh, I see. Okay. Yeah. So on the one hand, it may not have been an effective educational tool. On the second hand, it may have been applied to the wrong person.
I don't think he ever meant to do it punitively. I love this man.
Oh, okay, good.
But I think it was sort of, you know, jerk, what are you doing?
I see. Oh, yeah, that kind of, no, I think that's that kind of playful insult, if applied very carefully, and I think can have good results. But I think kicking in the shins generally, I would sort of shy away from that kind of technique. But the fact that you loved Mrs. Tiger is a
good
thing.
God, I loved him more than any teacher I ever had.
Why is that?
Oh, I don't know. I used to get there at 7 o'clock in the morning, and he would have me tune the violins. And and you know, I mean, I had such a devotion to the guy. I don't
you
really
just liked him.
Yeah, you know, I was real busy, and I've missed more funerals in my life than I should have. But when he died, I got in that car and I ran down to Queens. And his
well, that is fantastic, because then obviously he did what a teacher should do, which was to somehow influence and make whatever interaction that you had really memorable.
Oh yeah. You know, there are just some people in life. Do you have one who was more influential than anybody else?
Well, you know, I think I was lucky in that some teachers sort of would look at me, or you know, when they look at you and they say, "I know who you are," and you know, you're in fourth grade or eighth grade, and saying, "What? You know who I am?
Yeah.
Who am I? What is it?" And but what's more is when somebody recognizes something in you that you don't know, but then says, "I believe in you." That's huge.
Yes.
I think that's the part I think is so fantastic in giving kids motivation. You know, I know you can do it.
And
you do?
Yeah.
How come? Because I've seen you do it, and I know you, you know, you did it before, and you're going to do it again. Really? And I think it's the people that can build confidence. And I was very lucky that in each stage in life, there have been people that have kind of done that for me, because otherwise I know I would not have had the confidence to say, gee, okay, I'll go try.
How much did your parents have to do with who your teachers were?
I think my parents had a lot to do with our moving from France to the United States, which, and so that, I had a French, a wonderful lady, Mrs. Michelle Le Bent, and she was my teacher until from age 4 to 7. And then we moved, and then I studied, so that was, they introduced me to that cello teacher, and then the next, I think they had a lot to do with it. And then I studied with someone named Janos Schultz, who was a wonderful Hungarian teacher who was also an art collector, and he was kind of a wise man. And and then I was introduced by Isaac Stern to Leonard Rose, who became my main cello teacher. And my father taught two of the Stern children violin, and we all went to the same school, which is a bilingual school. And so then I met Leonard Rose, who was amazingly patient with me. I was a very shy kid, and Mr. Rose, as I called him, would tell me that he too was really shy, and you know, kind of made a point of telling me that so that I would gradually open up, and he was incredibly gentle with me, and I will never forget that.
Isn't it interesting how my guy was, his name was Eugene Steiger, but I called him Mr. Steiger, and I will for the, you know, till I'm out, and you call your guy Mr. Rose.
Absolutely, and to you know, to the end of his life, you know, like he would insist as, "Call me Yo-Yo, call me Leonard," you know, and I couldn't quite do it, you know, and I would always slip out as like, "Oh, Mr. Rose," and it's funny. I think that's maybe that kind of thing is done less so these days, but I think It's nice to call your teacher Mr. or something. Although when somebody calls me Mr. Ma, you know, I just automatically feel old.
You know, there's that story which we've all been warned not to ask anymore about putting the most famous violinist in the world down in the subway station and playing and, you know, people passing him by. And I'm wondering, has anybody ever used you for a trick of that kind?
Could you... you know, I've actually always had a fantasy to do that, to be a busker. And I do it just for the fun of it, you know, I mean, for to do it, not, you know, not to make money or anything, but just to experience what it's like to be a busker. I came to this close to it twice. So Bach, as you know, was the master musician for the Thomas Church in Leipzig. So all the cantatas were written there, and I was once supposed to go there and play a cello recital of Bach in that very
wow.
church that Bach played, that worked in. And so there were tourists. It's a big tourist site, and I was given a slot where I could actually try the acoustics of the church. But there were already tourists there, so I sort of crept up to the podium and took out the cello, left the cello case open, and I was trying not to disturb, you know, people walking around, and I just played very softly and gradually played a little bit more, and soon after that I was going to stop, but just before I stopped I heard ka-chink. And I looked down, and someone had just thrown some coins into my cello case.
Cool.
And they thought I was, you know,
yeah.
I was busking. I was, you know, and this poor cellist was, you know, playing in a church, in Bach's church. And so I got close to that. And the other time I did that was in Times Square, where I think in an hour I made like $1.83.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, I mean,
for the best cello player in the world.
Good for ice cream.
Let me ask you about the Goat Rodeo sessions. I take a little umbrage there because you've got these great people, mandolinist, the greatest bassist, the greatest fiddler. But I'm a five-string banjo player, and I want to know, how come I'm not hearing any five-string banjo in there?
Well, I'll tell you something, Alan. If you insist, we will get a banjo on stage, and I think what's amazing about these guys
yeah.
is that you throw a banjo at them or you hand them any one of the three.
Yeah, yeah.
And they'll be able to play really well.
In 3.5 seconds.
Yeah. This is what's so extraordinary. You know, me, I'm a one-instrument guy. I can plunk a couple notes on the piano. And I play the recorder, you know. But that's really... the thumb piano, but basically you can give, they could all play multiple instruments really well and obviously excel at one in a way that few people can. And they can all compose and improvise. And Chris, of course, is also a singer, songwriter, and Aoife O'Donovan can also sing and play multiple instruments. So I think it's the level of talent is kind of staggering. And besides which, Stuart Duncan, the violinist,
yeah.
and I are playing with two geniuses because both Edgar Meyer and Chris Thiele have won the Genius Award from the MacArthur
Ooh.
Award. So I just want you to know this is, you know, it's an impressive band that I'm playing with.
How did it start?
Friendship. I've been friends with Edgar for over 20 years. He's been friends with Chris for about 20 years, and they've both known Chris Thiele for about 20 years. And so I think it's a friend of a friend is a friend.
Well, Cambridge, of course, where you've hung out for years, is a great folk town. We had Joan Baez on just the other day.
Oh, that's so great.
You know, she's in her area where you are. I mean, you know, nobody's where you are. But it's astounding that the culture there is so mixed and that you have the both, you know, the wonderful BSO and also people like, I think the name of the record was from years ago, hanging around Harvard Square or Cambridge Square. It was just phenomenal.
Yeah.
And so there's this sort of culture of infecting each other.
Absolutely. I think this is one of the things that I love about places where that attract people of different interests and ways of thinking. You know, a university town is like that. I think Club Passim is where a lot of the folk music took place in Cambridge. And a place like the Berkshires actually has, you know, people talk more and more about the creative community, creative economy, and it is amazing what the variety of artisans, artists, craftspeople that are around and doing really beautiful, beautiful things. And I think that's it's places like this or in Cambridge that give rise to you know, the birth of movements, and that's certainly was the case at Tanglewood in you know with Krusevitzky in the 50s and 60s, and continues to be a place where a lot of innovation can take place because it attracts incredibly talented young people.
And the food. I mean, I remember going to the Harvard radio station, being brought up there by a friend, and across the street from it was a place called Elsie's. I think it was called Elsie's. And they had the fattest roast beef sandwiches I have ever seen in my entire life. It's probably gone by now. But
unfortunately, Elsie's is no longer there, but it was one of those iconic eateries. yes, for those that could survive those sandwiches. And Elsie Burger was one of the you know, best known products of Elsie's.
I remember once Kim Taylor, then Kim Smedvig, came in with Seiji and said to me, whispered in my ear, ask him about the Red Sox. And I said, okay. So the first question I said, what about them Red Sox? Came in there, Tanglewood on the porch where we are today. And he got a smile across his face and he began to wax eloquent about the Red Sox. And there was a famous music critic there, a local music critic. And he got the next question and he said, well, Maestro, what about the high C and the so-and-so? And he said, yes, that was very hard. But let me tell you about the Red Sox. So do you do sports?
My daughter actually does sports in a virulent way. I think she actually is a rabid Red Sox fan, and through her, I think she thinks that she was born in the wrong family because she wanted to be like 2 feet taller.
Right.
And she wanted to have been born in an athletic family. Unfortunately, I'm not an athlete, but you know, I do really do appreciate sports, and of course, we all are Red Sox fans. But yeah. Seiji, but I have to say, Seiji is truly rabid. I think Emily once sat next to Seiji at a baseball game, and it was hilarious to hear about it afterwards. Because Seiji was just so enthusiastic and so passionate. It's great.
Well, Yo-Yo, you've given us this incredible time out of your so busy life, and I can't tell you how much we love you and we appreciate you and honor you as a citizen of our area. You're as much a monument as anything else I could name, and I have to say we're all in awe of you, and we thank you so much for this wonderful time.
Ellen, it's so great to be with you. The iconic voice of Alan
Yo-Yo Ma will be performing this Sunday with the BSO at 2:30 and back again for the Goat Rodeo Sessions on August 15th. You can find out more information about both by going to tanglewood.org. You're listening to the Roundtables broadcast from Tanglewood on WAMC.